Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein. I am Tony Perkins.
I have no idea what that voice is. I can't even say my name.
You know what?
What do you do at the beginning of the show?
I don't know.
Who are you channeling?
I don't know. And
what
I didn't
was
even,
that?
I didn't know I was doing anything. I think Connor said to me at some point, why do you do a voice at the top of the show?
And Connor is his 10-year-old son, for people who don't know that.
It's not his agent.
No. But I got to tell you something. Connor has more astute observations about this show. He keeps saying Gary's the funny one.
Yeah,
he does, actually, that is true.
I swear to God, at dinner last night, he did say Gary's the funny one, and then he looked at his father and he said, uh-uh. And then when Tony looked back at his food, Connor looked at me and he went, I just shook my head no.
Sure.
He was going, you are the funny one. I said, Connor, you're not actually allowed to think that.
Yeah, but Connor actually is a big fan of mine, I want to say, but apparently he's Gary's fan as well. So.
And he's admitted that he's a fan of the show.
Yes, he has.
And I think that because he's a fan of the show, if he pulls in a whole bunch of 10-year-olds, I think we're going to be a big hit.
You'll be in the money demographic in 10 short years.
That's right.
By the way, the voice you're hearing, yes, ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, Rob Spivak.
That's where you were, right? Let me just watch you try to fix this.
Please keep going. Linguistic things happening there. Rob Spivak, be back with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Very cool.
I can't say that. He'd be back with us today. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that sounded natural. Pleasure. Thank you, fellas, for having me back. I appreciate it very much.
Right. Wherever you're here. And Rob Ford Jr. is here again as well.
Yes.
Thank you, Rob. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You know, when Annie was in here last week, you said no one had ever dressed like that who was an in-studio guest. So this week I decided to wear a dress.
Well, I was wondering why you were wearing a dress.
You know what? I was wondering if it was for that reason or just you found an excuse to sort of come out a little bit.
We're all getting more comfortable, and I'm just going to say this. Rob, all the right places.
Thank you.
Can I describe the lingerie I'm wearing right now?
Oh, no.
Underneath my clothes?
At least you guys are wearing clothes.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, you know what? You're very distracting and not in a good way.
Not good. Hey, you're not going to believe this. We have today a guest today who is, we have not been able to say this previously.
Thank you.
And rarely would anyone be able to say this. He is an Oscar nominee, an Academy Award nominee. You know him from Do the Right Thing. You know him from the TV show The Last Don.
Moonstruck. So many movies.
Danny Aiello is going to be with us today. Isn't that great?
Very excited.
He's got a brand new book, comes out in a couple of weeks. It is his life story. It's called I Only Know Who I Am When I Am Somebody Else. So it sounds like he has some insight into his own psyche.
Yes, or issues.
Nicely
put.
I'll let you phrase it.
I can only say that because Danny has a great sense of humor.
Yeah, he does. I'm looking forward to this. I actually met Danny. I know you've known him forever.
Yeah, I met him.
Yeah, you've known him decades.
You know what? I've known Danny most of my life.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not asking you to give me a year.
You know what? I'd be glad to give you the date because this is your last show.
See how fast he turns, Rob?
He does.
I do. I'm so fickle.
I met Danny early this year. I think it's the first time I ever met him. He was performing. I was one of the MCs for a Beatles tribute concert because this was the 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming to America. It was a big concert in New York City, and I was one of the hosts of that. And Danny was on the bill singing with a guy named Hassan who was rapping, and it was actually, I was shocked. I thought, this is really weird.
It's an odd booking.
He was really good. It was one of the more interesting acts of the night, and I mean that in a good way. I really do.
Along with all the things that Danny can do. He can do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He would tell you that he wished he could have been like Bobby Darin. He wanted to sing at the Copa. Mm-hmm. You know, he wanted to do that kind of a job. And his voice is pretty good. It's really pretty good.
I know he got started in the business later.
He did.
In his life. Would he have been age appropriate for the Copa, or did that era just miss him?
I bet he could have done that.
No, you know what? He was not really appropriate for that. He just missed it.
Yeah, okay.
He's, you know, it's always interesting to me, and you meet people like this all the time who are so good at something. He's a great actor, mm-hmm. and it's very successful, been in dozens upon dozens of movies, but they always want, there's something else they want to do.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to sing, and you hear about singers who want to act or want to be comedians. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people do a lot of things. Like, how many Sinatra painted? Tony Bennett paints.
Right.
People have, I think creative people just have an awful lot of outlets. Yeah. I know I have many.
Yeah. Do you paint? You know what? But I will say this. You're not. I know you don't paint, but you're a photographer. You're a very good photographer.
That's true. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love photography, and I think it's all connected.
Yeah.
I do.
I think it's very Mapplethorpe-like, but
oh no,
uh-huh, really?
No, I'm kidding.
He's seen prints. I haven't.
I think we have a different take on photography.
Maybe back to painting.
Go back to painting. I wanted to talk about something because recently I had the chance. Connor, my son, 10 years old, we mentioned earlier, was playing in a championship basketball game. It's these youth leagues that they have. And it was very funny. Actually, Gary came to one of his games, or his regular season games. His team lost every regular season game. Yet, because of the way they do things in youth sports now, all the teams go to the playoffs no matter what.
Okay, so the previous games don't even matter.
They don't count.
They really don't. They really don't. They don't.
Or was it point shaving? Well, no. I don't know how this works.
They do. Actually, they matter, and you are seeded based on your record. So they were seeded low.
You know, Rob, you're making jokes about something that has a lot of pathos.
I know.
as a guy with children, too, I'm very surprised you went there, because Tony is about to be very sweet here.
Well, here's the great thing. So anyway, they go to the playoffs, and they start winning, and they get to the championship game, which was fantastic. But I can only imagine.
Now, they didn't sandbag? They didn't, go for the low seed by just sort of playing halfway all season?
I said to the coach, I said, this was a great strategy. And he said, yeah, I wish. But I'm sure the parents on the other team were like, if these guys win, I'm sure they would be outraged because they had won no regular season games.
It was like the Black Sox scandal, though,
wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah. You know, of Virginia.
It was a very ugly time for Northern Virginia.
It was. It was very bad, you know. And Tony, I got to say, Tony spent a lot of money keeping Connor out of jail.
Well, just keeping it out of the papers.
That's right. It was great, though. And Connor plays flag football. He's very, I know we all say this about our kids, but he's a great athlete. I will willingly say, I don't know where this comes from because I'm not an athlete. Mm-hmm. He's a great quarterback. Great running back. He's good at basketball, and he's not particularly tall, but he's very good at basketball.
I think you like him.
I do like him, and I go to all of these things, and it is so. You have a son. Yeah, I've met Rob.
Robert is 11, so he's a little older than Connor.
Does he play sports?
He started in basketball last year and loved it. And thank God he had a coach that was good with kids his age, because I can't give him anything.
Yeah,
I mean, really. I make you look like Shaquille O'Neal. I am not an athlete at all. And it was just a horrifying thought to put my boy into something that I couldn't offer him any guidance.
Was the Shaquille O'Neal thing like a black slur?
No, it was a tall thing, I think.
I think it was about my weight, actually. It could have been any number of things.
I was going for the fact that he's a fine basketball player. I've read about it in the magazines.
This is the beauty of Rob Spiewak. You don't know what he was going for.
That's right.
Hey, you don't know what you're mad about.
Whatever it was going to be good.
But you probably went through a little bit of the same, not being someone who is athletically inclined. If he came to me with questions, I couldn't give him the answer.
And that's
a bad feeling as a dad.
I certainly couldn't teach him anything, but it is so joyful to go to these games. And I did not think I would be this kind of father.
You have no idea what I'm thinking right now while he's doing this. And I'll have...
Well, I yell and scream. It's like I'm at a Redskins game going to some of these games. I'm so I know what you're now I know what you're thinking.
Wait till I get there. you keep doing that. Wait till I get there.
Yeah. Tony right now feels like he just turned the wrong way on a one-way street.
I just saw the sign in front of me.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm very emotionally invested in these games.
He is not quite Rick Moranis in Parenthood. but I would like to travel in time for a moment.
Sure.
I'd like to go back to around 2004 or so, five. So Tony and I were working together on Good Morning America, as most of our listeners probably know by now. We talk about it a lot. That's how we met. And I was already with child. Mm-hmm. I had two sons when we were together, and Tony was pretty adamant about, you know, I don't think that we're going to have kids. I feel like I'm a little too selfish for this. Mm-hmm. I don't really think I'm going to be able to. So, you know, I heard that a lot.
Sure.
And so what he heard, though, was, I just went to a baseball game of Billy's yesterday, and it was so great to see my son. I played baseball in high school on a championship team. We won the championship, and I would never, ever have the talent that Billy has already.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I can only imagine. And Tony then said, it was so sweet. He said, where would you like to go for lunch? And so this would come up all the time. He would say, what are you doing later? Well, Ben has a Boy Scout meeting, and I never expected, oh my God, I never expected to be involved in Boy Scouts.
Right.
My idea of roughing it is going to a hotel I've never been to. So I learned how to camp, and I learned how to.
Yeah.
So I would say to Tony after a weekend, you know, he said, "What did you do for the weekend? What did you do?" And I said, "Well, I went on a camping trip, and you know, with Ben, and I had my own tent." He said, "Did they have showers?" And I would say, "No, they didn't have showers. We don't do that on a camping trip." And you know, he goes, why would you do that? And I said, because my son's in Boy Scouts and I want to be with my son. Yeah, see, this is why I just...
Yeah.
So I would tell these stories.
Why, yeah.
They would fall on deaf ears completely.
But not completely.
Yes.
I would listen.
Well, no, I remember what it was like when you were talking to... We were not the first in our circle to have kids.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's a very foreign concept.
It is.
And
it
one
is.
That doesn't interest you.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, you know, I was interested in that Gary is my friend and I knew his lovely wife and met his kids.
He was interested for me.
Yeah. But if Gary's telling the truth, I'm ashamed to say I kind of didn't get it. And I remember thinking, and Gary probably regaled me with some story. Oh, it was a championship game and Billy did this.
He made the final catch.
Right.
And won the championship.
And I probably said something like, I can't imagine spending 2 hours doing something like that.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
It just seemed like, you know, you have to do it because it's your children and it's not professional sports. And it's, you know, it really went over my head.
But to cut you a break, which I never do, there was no relatability. And I get it. There's no way to relate to it because I said to you back then, you may never have kids,
right,
but you won't know what this feels like by having people describe it to you. You will only know by having them.
Right.
And tell me what it was like as soon as Connor was born.
Oh my goodness. I'm all in. And I'm sure you, Rob, same way. All in.
Like a switch has been flipped.
It is literally like, and I think for men, it's different. You know, the women carry the child, but literally when he was put in my arms, it's a flip was switched. And Gary, he sees me with my son all the time. I adore him. I love going to the games. You know, it's
he doesn't miss anything, just like I didn't.
Right.
Tony will never be able to say, I wish, as busy as he is, he will never say, I wish I had spent the time doing, finish the sentence.
Right.
Yeah. I did, you know, when we did Good Morning America, I was a zombie.
Right.
But I went to everything.
Yeah.
And so does he.
So here's the funny thing.
You would think after all that, the boy would think he's funnier. I mean, God, what do you have to do?
Really, I'm supporting you here.
Yeah.
What's funny, though?
Uncle Gary's funny. That's
right,
the
that's right.
Always
that's
Uncle
right.
Gary.
See, there? Yeah, you're right. The funny thing is that after all this time, and, you know, now that I have a son and he's playing sports, he's been playing sports for years now, I would be telling Gary these stories, and I'd get this little look from Gary like,
Yeah, really?
Remember when you didn't really listen to me and my
stories?
And
now you expect me to?
Right.
Yeah. But I know, but of course, as you do, Rob, I know exactly where he is.
Sure.
He's living in every moment.
Yeah.
We get that vicarious. Look, you know what? when Billy was playing baseball and he was wildly talented, I was invested in every play.
Sure.
Yeah. Every play. And then when they put him into pitch, I had to pace. I couldn't sit in the stands.
Oh, me too. Me too. This is
I couldn't do it.
Flag football games, you'd think I'm one of the coaches pacing up and down this. I mean, I'm not crazy. Although I will say this.
Boy, you teed that up.
My behavior at some of the games has been slightly over the top, and I'm surprised.
Yeah. Can you give us an illustration of what you consider over the top?
Storming out onto the field.
Have you yelled at any sort of official?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
What about the day that you beat up three dads from the other team?
I was proud of that.
See, that's not so bad.
Because I didn't know he could throw a punch.
But I'm getting better. And Gary, I apologize that I wasn't.
No. You know what? We share about 9,000 things, and being fathers now,
yeah,
you know,
we've
been sharing that for the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And listen, I love the fact that you said, "I got it. Yeah. I got it. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening closer, right. But I understand.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
You know, but we live and die by all the things that they live and die by.
Yep.
Right, Rob?
It's true. Oscar gives me so much grief on the Michael Mara show. He says, "You're doing it for the kids. You're doing it for the kids. You're doing it just for the kids." I said, "Well, that's what you do.
That's what you do.
And you know what? Someday he may get it, but I don't know. Oscar's different.
Oh, Oscar. Yeah,
you mean even
Oscar's
if he has a kid?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially then.
Now, let me ask Rob Ford. You're a young man. Yes. You have no children, I assume?
No.
He doesn't have any that he knows of.
Do you have a girlfriend or?
I am on the market.
On the market. Yeah. Wearing that dress.
Wow.
You're on the market wearing that dress.
The night is young.
He's on the block.
Exactly.
Jenny's on the block.
Oh, boy.
That's a better phrase, is on the block.
Can you imagine having children and going to kids' games? Kids plays and enjoying it, and
I right now I can't imagine it at all. But mm-hmm. I've heard enough people say that like you were talking about, that switch flips.
Yeah.
And I don't think you should really be able to imagine it now. You're
no.
enjoying your time.
Yeah,
this is your time for this,
yep.
and that time comes later.
Yep.
And
yes.
it's all a process. And we were not. Sarah and I didn't feel like we had to be baby makers.
Mm-hmm.
We just said if the situation is right, if we didn't know how we would feel either.
Yeah,
and as soon as our oldest son was born, who's now 70, we just celebrated that, and he was
he's awake, he's alert,
right,
he had a few bites of cake,
he's back, but you know what, he began in Pampers, he's back in them now. So, but you know, once Ben was born, we were professional parents.
Sure, yeah.
And we didn't know. You know what? The day we brought him home from the hospital, he was in a Moses bed. You carry that straw
sure.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
We put him in between us. And we were laying in bed.
Wait,
and
Rob Ford is dying.
We could not.
He loves Old Testament jokes.
So we put Moses between us, and neither one of us could go to bed because we just wanted to make sure that he continued to breathe through the night.
I've been there. And we couldn't sleep. Been there, yeah.
Oh. Who is this?
Did you have this? When we were discharged from the hospital, now, first of all, they were kicking us out of the hospital
right.
because Hurricane Isabel was making landfall,
God, yeah.
and that hit us hard in
yep.
this area. So they were getting everybody out. I literally feel like they were pushing us out the mm-hmm. door. That's kind of my memory. And I'm like, what? We don't know what to do, huh?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't really there for that because actually, I didn't give birth to Connor, but
the memories are murky.
Yeah, they are.
But, well, we spent a lot of time together.
Actually, I do remember the labor pain. Yes, I listen. You know what? Every cut, every bruise,
yeah.
every embarrassment they go through, everything they suffer, you suffer it, and it's very hard. Isn't it really hard today not to spoil your child?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It is, absolutely.
Oh, now
it's just
yeah.
is.
Almost
it's
impossible.
Easy to spoil them, right?
Why?
Right.
Why is it worse now than it was when we were kids?
Stuff is so instantly available.
It's instantly available, and I think a lot of people in our generation have been fortunate, not everybody, but fortunate enough to, you know, do what you want to do, and that's each generation does better than the generation before.
And the very thought that, I mean, I grew up mostly, spent a lot of time with my grandparents growing up,
mm-hmm.
and I remember them paying bills by stacking out money.
Yeah,
I mean, and
really?
There weren't credit cards. I mean, you know, it was they had this money, and that's what you had to make work.
Were your parents in the mob?
They were in the mob.
just counting
which,
on
my... Which reminds me, we probably should get to our guest because we gave him a time.
Yeah. Speaking, that's right. Yes, speaking of that.
That's a nice transition. Wow. Speaking of the mob, let's call our...
Well, you know, I don't want to piss off Danny.
No.
That's
no.
not a good thing. So, you know, I never even really had a chance to begin to tell you, like, why I know him.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah, how did
Danny,
you meet?
Danny got me... You know what? I would probably not be in the business if it wasn't for Danny Aiello.
Really?
He gave me my first break when I was a kid. And, you know, and he talks about it. I talk about it when we get together, and I still give him the kudos for it. Dan?
Yeah, Gary, I'm here.
Hey, Danny, you're on the air with us. Tony Perkins, Gary Stein, Rob Spiewak.
Hello.
Rob's not very bright. Don't talk to him.
I'm certainly not going to remember everybody's name. I have more difficulty reminding myself of my own.
Hey, Danny, you know what? The only name you need to remember is mine. So, you know, listen.
That's right. Gary Stein, my boy.
Yeah.
The kid I made. Remember that. Remember that, buddy.
Danny.
Just telling
as we were dialing you, first of all, Rob Spiewak, our producer and engineer, was playing Save the Last Dance for me.
Baby, dance with me.
Yeah.
Do you hear that? Do you hear that?
You can dance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I hear it.
Yeah, that's it. So
yeah, it's Hassan, Damon Johnson, and I. It's the first time that classic standards, in my belief, has ever been done with rap.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So Hassan and I decided to do that. We did three songs, actually. Save the Last Dance, and we did another one, which was written by this young lady, Mayor Maisano, who had written this wonderful song called City of Light. And then, of course, we did Besame Mucho,
yes.
Which I think has 600,000 hits on YouTube,
Danny,
which is a surprise for an old bastard like me. You know,
we loaded all of them, Danny. You know, it's like, listen, there isn't much research I need to do about you, because what I was saying when we dialed was, and you just joked about it, but the fact is, I don't know if I would have had a career without you. You gave me my first job. You and I wound up on Broadway together in our debuts. You know, you as the star of the show, and I was a 20-year-old peanut who had no experience whatsoever, and you gave me the job as a stage manager. And I've been telling you for all these years that you're responsible for my career. I mean, you know,
Well, Gary, I can't say that your ability to be creative wasn't there and probably would have made it without me. But I must admit that when we were in the Paramus Theater doing that particular show,
yes,
I remember meeting you and confiding in you. And I think the reason, as you could remember, was that I detested everyone else in the cast. And they detested me as well. And... You know, it got to the point where every time I got a great review, I was apologizing to the other actors. And I thought that was the thing to do because I was a neophyte. I was an amateur. I didn't know the way you were supposed to behave. But I was getting great reviews and they were not. So I was saying, what the hell do the reporters know if they're giving me great reviews? But how this backfired was that they hated me for even bringing it up. So we had no conversations, but my conversations generally took place with this kid, and that was you. And so much that I confided in you, that I trusted you, and lo and behold, what happened when I did the Broadway show, I did have the influence to say who will get hired, as you know, with Louis LaRusso, who was the writer. And I said, I want this kid here. And bingo, there you are.
I couldn't believe you did that. And you introduced me to the producer who came in with the money. And the guy goes, what does the kid do? And you went up and you said, oh, yeah, the kid. Yeah, what the kid does is the kid's the stage manager. Danny, I wasn't 100% sure what the stage manager did. And after I was given, because, you know, in Paramus, I was an intern. I didn't make a nickel. You know, it's like doing radio, And so, Danny, I swear to God, after I got the job because of you and the producer said, what does the kid do? And you said, he's the stage manager. I got my equity contract. They bought me my equity card, and I went to the drama bookshop to pick up the stage manager's handbook to figure out what my job was.
Right. We were both brand new then.
Yes.
Both brand new. I never studied acting, and here was really the first thing that I've really ever done to be perfectly honest, one of the few things. And you're talking about you not knowing what to do. When the director first told me when I was on the stage we're going to block, I thought he was talking about offensive linemen. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. What do you mean blocking? I had no idea that that's what they said actors do. They create movement on the stage, which is pre-planned, and that's what they call blocking.
Danny, this is Tony Perkins, Gary's co-host here, and this is all well and good. This is a wonderful story. You're lifelong friends, dear friends, and all that, but I just want to establish that essentially what's been said here is that you and Gary are great friends by default. It's because you didn't like anyone else, no one liked you, so it was just Gary. That was it, right?
I've known him so long. He's always been very creative. Then, as you know, he's gone into TV and so forth. This, of course, was entirely on his own, as it was on the stage as well, because he was very competent. He knew exactly what he was doing. Once he got started, he was someone that could truly be trusted. And in the acting field, it's a field of untrust for the most part, distrust. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to find a person you could really say, all right, this guy's in my corner or this girl's in my corner. With this kid, I refer to him as kid because that's what he was at that time. I truly trusted him. And I needed that because I was a person in need of knowing how good or bad he was. When people complimented me or I got an award, as he knows, I would look at him and say, how good could it be if I got it? It was even with the Academy Award nomination, I did that with the Academy Award nominations, the Academy Award that I won for a short film, Emmys. Every time I got it, it cheapened the award.
I can speak up for you like you could speak up for me. That is so untrue. Listen, going back to Paramus, that was your first play, and the reason they wouldn't speak to you is, we won't say the play because we'd have to go after these guys. But you won the Straw Hat Circuit Award, which was the award for the traveling shows in the summer stock circuit. It was your first acting job. You killed it. Wow. You won the award. All those guys were veterans except you, Danny. They weren't going to like you. And I was looking suck up every bit of theater and experience. And you and I turned to you. And we I didn't know you were new. I just knew you were this guy who was amazing.
Yeah, it was like the blind leading the blind. I don't know where the hell I was. Do you remember? Do you remember who presented me with the award at Jimmy's? I had the ugliest. Today this suit would be fine with Greenpeace and all of that. I had the ugliest green suit you've ever seen with stripes on it. I'll never forget it. How in God's name I chose to wear that suit, I'll never know. But I walk up to the podium and they're holding my trophy and saying to me, ladies and gentlemen, Danny Aiello was Cary Grant.
And
it was wonderful because I whispered in his ear, I'm scared shit. Excuse my language. And Cary Grant responded to me, so am I, kid. That's what he said to me. And as years went by, I did a movie with Paul Mazursky, may he rest in peace, called The Pickle, in which I made love to a woman called Diane Cannon, who was Cary Grant's wife.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in doing a scene, a love scene with her, I was unused to doing love scenes and I was apprehensive about it.
Yeah, you did
so
pretty
I said,
well.
I said, I said to Diane, I'm very, very nervous about it. She said, don't worry, kid. So as we're kissing and making love, I said, I am very nervous. And I thought that she would come back with, so am I, kid, like Cary did. But she came back with, well, I'm not, baby. you had to be there. I thought you were going to say what Cary Grant said, but she said what she said. It was a wonderful experience.
Danny.
Go on, I'm sorry.
No. Danny, I will never stop you, but I just want to say that as long as I've known you and as many conversations and meals as we've had, I never heard that story.
Wow.
That is a phenomenal story.
Because we hadn't seen each other in a long time, Gary. That was it.
Yeah.
Read my book. My book is coming out October 14th.
Well, we're about to talk about that, yes.
I want to mention the book.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't lead in. I shouldn't have led into it.
Oh, no. Hey, Danny, let me just say this. You don't have to apologize for anything. We are all in this studio huge fans.
Yes.
Your body of work, and you sound very humble. Your body of work is amazing. And when we were talking about you were going to be on the show, and we start going through the movies you've been in are some of our favorite movies and some of my favorite performances on film. So we're thrilled you're here. I want to mention the book. The book is I Only Know Who I Am When I Am Somebody Else, My Life on the Street, on the Stage, and in the Movies. And it's out when? Next month?
It comes out October 14th.
It's a Simon & Schuster release.
Yes, the Simon & Schuster. We just got a very lucky break, which fortunately, they just told me, actually, maybe 2 days ago, that we've been chosen by, by Barnes & Noble, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Their outlets throughout the country. We've got the Holiday Table, which is a term I've never heard used, from October 28th till December 31st.
Oh, my goodness.
So out of all Simon Schuster's publishing books, we are the only ones of theirs that made that table. So I'm very excited.
Danny, I got to tell you something about that. That's because great. Having been a Good Morning America producer, every year we used to celebrate the books that were on the table for the holidays, and those were the ones that were going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
So
yes,
that it means.
Yes, you son of a gun. I love hearing that.
Danny, let me ask you a question, because you've talked about this, and I know you write about it in the book. You came to acting relatively late. You know, some guys start when they're 20 years old, what have you. You started later in life. What were you doing before, and what made you decide, you know what, I want to give this acting a shot?
Well, Sandy and I got married very young. We've been married, God knows, 60 years now. We still feel relatively young. Mm. But we've been together for our entire lives. I mean, she's been with four different Dannys, meaning I'm always Danny, but we're both Geminis, and we're not quite sure who we are.
I'm right there with you. You know that.
Gary, I didn't know where I belonged, what I was going to do. I worked at Curtis Wright. I assembled jet engines as a kid. I lost that job as a result of a Wildcat strike. I drove a private cab for a while, another taxi, and I truly thought my life would be that of a chauffeur, and that would have been all right with me because I love being alone, and being alone in the car, if you wanted to speak or not speak, you could. That's probably what I would have enjoyed much more in life. But I became the union president at the Greyhound Bus Union, Amalgamated Transit Union, Local Division 1202, and I did that for about 10 years at Greyhound. I lost the job as a result of a Wildcat strike, and I was sued for $500,000, and because of that, I lost all interest in union at that time and decided not to fight my case. The reason I lost all that feeling about unions is because they didn't back me. Mm-hmm. And they had all the right in the world to do so. They backed the company instead of me. Mm. So I lost the job, decided not to fight it. I'm floundering around. I bump into a place called The Improvisation. Bud Friedman, who was prior a friend of mine, offered me a job, and he recognized my talent, so he made me a bouncer. Now, I'm a guy basically uneducated. I was in high school for about a half hour. So naturally, when you go into an unemployment office as an ex-union president, how do you get a job as a union president? It's an elected position. You don't. So I didn't get a job. So he gave me a job of $150 a week off the books. And watching Bud MC, I had to be the bouncer, but at times I had to spell him as an MC. When he wasn't there, I would get up and MC. And it was through that I learned, truly, along with my union meetings, how to conduct myself in front of people. Of course, I was terribly nervous, always, constantly. But the fortunate thing with me is I never showed my nervousness. And how do I know that? Because people would say to me, God, you seem so comfortable up there. And all the time they're saying that, I'm saying they're full of shit. They don't know what they're talking about. But through that, Louis LaRusso II, who Gary knew very well.
Another godfather, Danny.
Playwright.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. He's never done anything produced. He comes over to me with a play, and he says, I want you to be in my play. I said, why are you asking me? I'm not an actor. He said, you are. You just don't know it yet. And from that, it all began. And I was the age of 36. Mm. And the first thing I did on the stage was a showcase production that Gary's familiar with called Lamppost Reunion. Mm-hmm. Now, that play eventually went to Broadway. Then he wrote Wheelbarrow Closes for me. That went to Broadway. Then he wrote Knockout for me. That went to Broadway. But in all of that happening, a movie was casting in Central Park called Bang the Drum Slowly.
Yes.
Now, I started on the stage at the age of 36. Bang the Drum Slowly came available, Bobby De Niro starring in it, came available at the age of 40. I was 40 years old. I walked out there. Someone said they're casting and whatever. I went. John Hancock was the director. He threw a ball and a bat at me. I began banging shots, catching the ball. He said, "You got it." I said, "I got what?" He said, "You're playing the first baseman."
Wow.
So I was 40 years old when I did my first movie, and that was the first of about 90 of them.
That's
how it all began. Purely, Tony, purely by luck, I backed into it. I never wanted to be an actor. I didn't know what acting was. I thought acting was people who lived in Hollywood, mm-hmm. brown-nosed each other, and became actors.
Well, that's true. That exists.
I had no idea about acting. Mm-hmm. Now I found out too much about it. I love acting, but I hate the business of,
yes,
of acting.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Danny, I got to just throw something in. One of my favorite experiences, you and I were hanging out at Charlie's. We were at the restaurant. It was middle of the day. And you said to me, "You know, Bang the Drum Slowly is playing at the Paris Theater next to the Plaza. Why don't we take a walk up there? Maybe we'll go see the movie." So I have no idea. I know you're in it, but I had no idea how big a part you had in the movie. And you and I go up. Do you remember? We went up to see the movie together. We sat in the audience where there were like 12 people in the theater, and we're watching your movie together.
I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And let me tell you something. Let me pass on Tony, Gary, and the rest.
Mm-hmm.
The great friend of mine was Vince Gardenia, mm-hmm. one of the wonderful actors who passed away. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Vincent was the manager of the team, the baseball team in Bang the Drum Slowly. I hardly knew Vincent, but I respected the hell out of him. He wasn't a mentor, but the closest thing to it.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent was all dressed in his Yankee Mammoth uniform, but it was really a Yankee uniform. And I was with mine. And I'm sitting in the corner with a jock strap hanging from my finger, mumbling words to myself. And Vincent comes over and he says to me, "What's the matter, kid? Something wrong?" I said, "Well, Mr. Gardenia, you know, these are my first lines in a movie. This is my first one. I'm not quite sure how to say the lines. You know, I'm real worried about it. I mean, if I do the lines, you know I can do them, but I'm not sure if I can do them right. You know, I'm really thinking about if I do it wrong and it's up on the screen and I see the movie 50 times and if it sucks, it's going to suck 50 times. So he looks at me and he says, "Don't worry, kid. You're probably never going to work again anyway." I swear to God, that is what Vinny said. And fortunately, he was wrong, but I think he was kidding at the time. You had to beat it.
That is great. So does it come naturally to you? Did you later have any kind of training or it just comes naturally?
No training at all. But it's interesting that you use a word. I'm not putting this on you, but I hate it. Woody Allen used to call me a natural actor, and many of the critics would call me natural, and they would make terms like, "Well, that's not, you know, that's him. He's not acting. That's him." When people use the word natural to me, that to me was an insult. It was saying to me, "You're a natural." Therefore, to me, it meant that they were saying I was untrained, unlearned, I wasn't a student of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So anything I was doing was lucky and doing it naturally. Mm-hmm. Like Woody Allen one day came over to me and said, "Man, Danny, you were great." Trust me, Louis, once in a while he says this. "Danny, you were great. If we could only get you to leave." Now, can I curse in this program?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Knock yourself out.
Can I tell you what I said?
Yes.
Yeah. How the hell could he say I was good? I just came out and do it. What the fuck, is he crazy? I did it good. What good? I just did it. There was no plan, no nothing, no premeditation. I just did it. How could it be good? You follow me? That was Woody. I used to consider natural an insult.
I see. I get that.
It meant that you were untrained, period.
Right.
Yeah, except Woody Allen kept
using you. It was absolutely natural. It was absolutely natural. And I brought to the screen and on the stage the things that I knew in life, and I tried to simply recreate them on the stage or on the screen. Or on that wasted medium TV.
Hey, but hey, Danny.
Sorry, Tony.
Danny, but when yes. When people talk about being natural, just be natural in this part. Just kind of be yourself. Be natural. First of all, that isn't actually an insult. It's the hardest thing in the world to do.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And I remember on our first show on Broadway, Lamppost Reunion, somebody said, and I was always hanging around the lobby after the show to hear what people had to say, and I was out, and somebody was talking about you. I don't know if I ever told you this, but the guy said, you know, the guy who played the bartender, you know, he doesn't look like he's acting at all. He's just, I think he's a bartender. Mm-hmm. Is there a better compliment an actor could possibly get?
No, I love those things. The person in the street uses it, that's fine with me. I know exactly what he's saying. But when a critic uses, that's an intellectual putting on me a natural ability as opposed to one that's trained.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Who's been,
yeah.
It's like a sly put down. It's a sly put down.
Almost as if what you're doing is
by
accident.
I've always felt that
right.
way.
I get that completely.
I might have been wrong, but that's how I felt.
You've made so many amazing movies, and we want to touch on a couple of them. I know Rob, our partner here, is a huge Moonstruck fan, as am I, and you know,
and
so many
me,
people.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a very high praise, Danny, if I can call you that, is that in that movie, a lot of people have made memorable movies, but I shall always remember your character name because, it's Johnny Camerari. And it's one of my favorite lines in the whole film.
I used to tell Norman Jewison, the director, all the time, I said, I hate this part. He said, what? I said, I hate it. I don't want people in my neighborhood to see me as a wimp. I'm not a damn wimp. I said, and the more I created the character, the more I wanted to vomit. I tell you God's truth. It did everything in the world for me to lift me to another level of money-making as a result of showing that I can do situation comedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there were
yes.
some very hurtful things about that. When I was doing that, you know, we were talking about Johnny Camerari's mother dying in Italy and him saying, I can't marry you. If I do, my mother will die. So on the street, people would stop me and say to me, how's your mother? She's still dying. And that was a sad thing.
Oh.
Because at the time, my mother was dying.
And
the people... I forgave the people. They didn't know, and I never even brought it up to them. But that's what I was going through at the time. But I ended up loving the movie. I loved working with Cher. I love Nicolas Cage, and he finds a problem with lots of people loving him. I don't know why, but I've always adored that kid.
Danny, tell them about the meeting, the relationship of Spike Lee and you going in to do the right thing.
Well, Spike, I was invited to, at the time, I was on my way, of all things, to do Moonstruck in Canada. We were finishing our work in Canada, Norman Jewison's home. He lived in Toronto. And I was in New York before leaving for that, and I went to Madonna's party. She had some sort of a party. And I was bored to hell. The music was playing, and I wanted to leave. I started to walk out. And it was this little circular bench in what was like a vestibule with this little black kid sitting there. I didn't know who the hell he was. He walks over. He said, I'd love you to do my film. I said, what film? Are you a filmmaker? He said, yeah. My name is Spike Lee. It meant nothing to me.
Right.
Although vaguely I remember something about a picture that came out. Of course, she's got to have
it. She's got to have it.
So
right.
I knew there was something about him. Yeah, so he said, I said, well, look, do me a favor. I can't do it now. I'm leaving right now, but I'm leaving for Canada. Call my agent and let's see what happens. So that was it. We never discussed anything else. I'm in Canada doing Moonstruck. I get a phone call from, of all people, Spike Lee, and he said, did you get the script? I said, what are you talking about? He said, the script. I sent you the script. Do the right thing. I said, oh, no, they just called me and told me you didn't put enough postage on it. It's at the damn border. It was sitting at a border post waiting for me to pick it up. However, I did eventually pick it up. I read it, and I hated it.
Really?
And here's what I said to him. The first thing I read was tossing pizzas in the air. So I visualized myself with a baking hat on and a white uniform and me flipping pieces in the air. Now, that is the most anti-Italian thing I could think of.
I remember you saying this, Danny.
I said to him on the phone, I said, Spike, this is tantamount to me offering you a pod that required you to eat watermelon. Mm-hmm, I said, there is no way I'm going to do so. That's what I said to him. And he accepted. He laughed. We joked. We had a lot of fun. But I told him I wasn't interested in doing it. I came back. He took me Yankee Stadium. He took me to Knick games. He followed me all over until he broke me. That was after he had made some. That was after he had made some superior modifications. He fixed it. It was still too much of a cartoon. So I said to him, if you allow me input, now ultimately you'll make the choice as to what stays and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. But I'd love some input to be able. So little did I know that he allows his actors to put in significant inputs of their life, you know, the lives that they've experienced. So he allowed me to do it, and Hanson Forprice decided to do the script, and it came out with an Academy Award nomination, a Boston Critics Award, Los Angeles Critics Award, Chicago Critics Award. And then I said, if I got these awards, how good could they be?
Danny.
But anyway, that's our Spike. But Spike and I were so different politically. I'm a conservative quite naturally. He's a liberal. And he loves Michael Jordan. I loved, you know, Larry Bird. Mm-hmm. He loved the Knicks. I loved at the time the Boston Celtics. I mean, we are true examples of two political figures who are on a completely different plane, but yet have a great friend relationship.
I love that.
So
I love
it shows that political liberals and conservatives can get along, and we do.
I love that.
We just did the 25th anniversary.
Yeah,
I saw
pictures of you and Spike together at the 25th anniversary. And I just want to say, because I know this was a pivotal role in your career, and the movie is more than just a movie, really. And it came out at a time, I remember seeing it and I liked it, but I was uncomfortable watching it because it was touching on things that are so big.
It
was challenging. That's a good word for it. And I always thought that your performance and the performances of many of the actors in the movie, and in fact, Spike Lee directing this movie, I thought it was all very brave because it was dealing with something that people don't like to talk about, don't like to deal with, and I thought it was dealing with it all very honestly. I thought that was magnificent.
You know something? When I saw the film, not for the same reason, I was taken back by it. Let me tell you why. Not unlike The Godfather was a fairy tale. You see, The Godfather to me was not drawn in reality, because I've known those wise guys and I've known the situation of wise guys. They were like Shakespearean characters speaking a language I never heard wise guys speak. Mm-hmm. It was a great movie, The Godfather, but for me, it was like a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. When I looked at Do the Right Thing, there were no drugs involved in a place, Bed-Stuy, that is drug infested more than you could ever imagine. Coke vials all over the street, heroin vials all over the street. Until later, I realized that Spike didn't want to upset what he was trying to show the people. Mm-hmm. He wanted the racial issues to be discussed, not because black people were taking drugs or white people were taking drugs, but that all of them were not taking drugs, and this was the way they truly felt in their own heads. Mm-hmm. Do you follow what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Without drugs getting in the way. Now, yeah. The neighborhood of Bed-Stuy, it was beautiful. It was gentrified. It was beautiful, and everything looked great. It's not like that in Bed-Stuy.
Right.
Bed-Stuy is a forgotten place where they should pay a little more attention to, because there are so many people drug-ridden. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying to you is, I didn't realize at the time that this is what Spike was doing. He wasn't trying to show a drug reality or a street reality. He was trying to show a reality of racial problems when people are in their own head without the influence of drugs or anything else. And he succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
He succeeded. This was a political point of view on his part. Sure, there are a lot of things like Tawana Brawley that were bullshit things that never actually happened. I think in my own mind, I'm not speaking for him, and I'm probably wrong, he probably would have withdrew the Tawana Brawley thing, because as we know now, that was false.
Right.
She was falsely accusing someone of doing something, and a group of people, but they stood with it.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, that was one of the problems in the script that troubled me. Those things you put in the script, it's so there, you can never get rid of it. And right. It goes on for 100 years, and there is a lie being perpetuated.
Right.
Did I
right.
make sense to you guys?
Yeah, oh, I understand what you're saying. Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
That's my intellectual portion you just got.
The intellectual
I don't want you to think I don't want you to think I can't speak English.
No, that actually, Danny, that was a beautiful sermon.
Hey, Danny.
Sermon, I love it.
I don't know if you'll remember this. This is Tony.
That's Tony talking now.
Yeah.
Tony, I'm sorry, Tony.
Oh, no, that's okay. But I want you and I met, and you might not know this. You and I met in February. I was one of the hosts for this Beatles tribute concert celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in America.
Oh, my God. I sung Let It Be. You were there, Tony?
Yeah, and you were one of the acts with Hassan. And now I'm going to tell you the absolute truth. I look at the program and the list of performers, and it's like one of the Beach Boys is there, Tommy James from the Shondells, Marshall Crenshaw, all these people. And I see Danny Aiello, and I'm like, what? And then I see you come out with this black guy, this rap guy, Hassan, and I'm like, what is this? But man, it was one of the best performances of the night. Very interesting.
It was great.
And I didn't know anything about this side of you. I was blown away. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Anthony. Thanks, Tony, very much. I appreciate that, babe.
How did this come to be? How did you hook up with Hassan? I've now seen the videos that you've done, mm-hmm. which are great. Save the Last Dance for Me and Besame Mucho. Mm-hmm. How did this come to be?
Yeah, we have an album out called Bridges, which we do a lot of classic tunes. We do Let It Be.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney heard it. Now, Paul didn't tell me this because I don't know it, but a friend of ours, John, who works in publishing, Tita, told me that John heard it and loved our rendition of it.
Paul heard
I'm
it.
Hoping to believe that. I can't say for certain if he did. Hassan and I, we were at a studio in New York City on Varick Street. What was it called? Looking. Chung King, forgive me, because it's no longer there.
Uh-huh.
Chung King Studios. I was up there recording Home America, which is one of the songs on the album. And I'm walking out, and he was with an entourage sitting there, and they came over because they recognized me as an actor, and they were telling me how much they liked me as an actor. So he said, what are you doing up here, Danny? I said, I just finished a single. He said, did you produce? I said, no, I sang it. He said, oh, I didn't know that. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm a rapper, and I just did this thing, Waiting, which was the John Mayer thing, which is a great thing. And he attached a rap to it, which was not to be released as a commercial piece. It was simply done for a benefit. And the song Waiting with Hassan's voice on it is sensational. Hmm. So he and I got to be friendly. We're talking, you know, explaining, wow. He takes me in the hit of rap, the song Waiting, and it was great. We left. We got in touch. We met in Hoboken at Tutti Pasta, a restaurant where I had a comedy club. And we were talking, and he said, you know, Danny, would you consider doing rap with me? And I said, let me say this from the beginning. I hate rap. You can't stand with this. I hate rap.
Danny, I wish
so
you'd be honest.
I'm telling you guys, I hate it. It sucks. I hate what they're saying and all that crap. Hassan and I leave the lunch and decide we're going to try one of the songs. Besame Mucho.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes home and cuts in a rap to Besame Mucho. We go in my car, which is where I listen to all my music, where I rehearse all my music, mm-hmm. in my car, and I almost punched holes through my ceiling listening to this little thing that he did with Besame. We decided at that point to release those three videos before we did the album, and the people kept calling in like the hits. First of all, Besame, all over the internet, it's got over a million hits. Yeah. On YouTube, it's close to 600,000. But we decided to do this, and that's what we have. And that's how it came about, just like that. We become very close. I bring him to some of my performances where I sing straight, my own show. And then, of course, I bring him out once in a while, and we do five rap songs. Me doing classic standards.
No one's ever
done that. Steven Tyler did something, but he didn't do a classic standard. We did classic standards with rap. Never been done.
And it works. As you're describing it, and I saw it live, people are going to say, what? I encourage everyone to go to YouTube, go on the internet, look for Danny Aiello with Hassan, H-A-S-A-N, Besame Mucho, Save the Last Dance for Me. It works. It's really, really good. And I was blown away.
Hey, Danny, you know what?
Thanks, Tony.
Danny, all those years ago, back when we were doing all those Broadway shows, I remember you saying, and it surprised me very much, you said, you know, if I had my choice, I'd have a career like Bobby Darin. And I thought, you got this great acting career. And you said, yeah, but I always wanted to sing. You know, you made it happen. You really have just kind of gone after everything that interested you. And I've always admired you for that and the fact that, you know, you don't like to talk that much.
No, Gary, you know something, Gary, about singing? When my friend Tommy Vandell talked me into doing an album, all right? The first guy to ask me to do an album was after I did Papa Don't Preach with Madonna.
Yeah.
I played her father in it. Then I had an answer video to that written by Artie Schreck called Papa Wants the Best for You. And what is his name? The guy who...
Stein.
Seymour Stein calls me into his office. He was running Sire Records, right? And he asked me to do an album. I said, what would I sing? And he said, Italian songs. I sort of was upset that he mentioned Italian songs. Yeah. You know, I love Italian songs, but I don't sing Italian songs. So I said, no, thank you. And it was incredible. Here's Seymour Stein. He's huge. And I said, no. Now, Tommy Vandell comes around later. He used to work for Universal Records in Asia first and then here in the United States. He asked me to do an album, but I said, what am I going to sing? He said, pick 50 songs that you've loved all your life. We'll reduce it to 15 and we'll do it. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. So it sounded like an easy thing to do, and I got out and I did it. Well, okay. 15 songs are down. The album hit number 4 on traditional jazz chart. Tony Bennett was number 1. And I think the other one was, I think, the horn player. I forget his name. In any event, I was proud. It lasted 2 weeks. You know, it was Billboard's traditional jazz chart.
Right, right.
And what happened was it was exciting, but now I got to go out and back up the album. So I started doing live shows. Tony, Gary, when I went out to do live shows, you know, I came on the stage. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, you know I'm an actor, so don't expect too much. I apologize like a schmuck. And now you know what's happened to me? Years later, after 4 albums of my 5th that'll be out in a month, after 5 albums, I come out on the stage and I say, if you don't like me, that's your problem. I like what I do. And, and you know what taught me that? Bobby Darin, the little guy, used to come out and dare people not to like what he did. And I'm not a great singer, but I get out and I render a tune and I do the best I can. Some people like it. Others may not, but they never mention it.
Which is the great thing, for the most part, they don't. Danny, we gotta cut you loose. The book is I only know who I am when I am somebody else. It'll be out in the stores and on Amazon and everywhere in a couple of weeks. You got a new CD coming out as well, and man, it's just been great to have you.
May
on
I
the
just
show.
Mention?
Yeah,
Anthony, may I just mention the songs? There are 2 songs and a DVD.
Okay.
It's a little package, a video. The songs are This River. It's about Alzheimer's, of all things. It's one of the best things I've ever done. But it's blues. It's like I've never sung before. And the other song, just like my book, with the exception of one word, the song is called I Only Know Who I Am When I Am Somebody Else. That's the name of the song.
Okay.
Somebody Else, and the other one is This River, and it'll be out next month, right, Lou? And it'll be eligible for Grammys, so get out there and vote for it, damn it.
Okay. Hey, Danny.
I love all you guys. Gary, I miss you and love you, and I'll see you soon.
I love you, Danny. You know what? I'd like to get a chance to know you better.
Well, my God, we go a lot of years, you young kid, you.
Yes, we do.
Incidentally, Gary.
Yes, dear.
I am still beautiful, man. I am a beautiful
Danny, I never wanted to admit.
I'm an Alta Kaka. Do not think I'm an Alta Kaka for all the Jewish people out there.
No, no. No, I never I never wanted to admit that I thought you were gorgeous.
Danny Aiello, thank you so much.
That will not make it heterosexual if you were to say that. All right, guys.
I love you, Danny.
I love you all.
I love
you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Danny Aiello. Wow.
It's too.
Wow.
You know what I feel bad about? It's too bad that Danny's not willing to reveal himself.
Right. He won't open up.
No, he hates.
Shy and
he
quiet.
Hates to talk. Yeah. You know, you have to pull it out of him. It's terrible.
And on the next episode of the Tony Perkins Show, him and Charlie Gibson in a fistfight.
You know, I think. Did we just do three shows?
Yeah, I think we did. I do want to say this. It's great. Danny is about to embark on a book tour, and I guess sounds like a CD tour as well.
Yeah.
He's going to be everywhere, and because of his friendship with Gary, he did us first. That is fantastic.
Yeah, we are first.
Yeah, love it.
And he's truly going to have a Merry Christmas.
Yes, he is.
When he gets that selection like that, he's going to do very well. Yeah.
He really doesn't know, but it's going to be unbelievable. I have to say, you know, with all that Danny said, well, I just want to say that one of the things I admire the most about him is that Danny, you know, he was afraid of everything, and I never knew that, and he just did it anyway, and he said yes to every great adventure, and he taught me something about just going with it, even if you're afraid, just say yes.
Just say
I
yes.
would call him about things that I was about to do, and he would say, Gaff, you don't do it, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah. Just say yes.
Back to being scared.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, when you hear that from Danny.
Yeah.
So the book comes out, I Only Know Who I Am When I Am Somebody Else. What's the best way for people to get that?
You can pre-order it now. The best way to do it, it's available in hardback and for your Kindle at Amazon.com through the Mike O'Mara Show site. Please go through our site. It helps us out a lot.
All right. Very good.
Wonderful.
That's a show.
I think it's a show.
We had a lot of other stuff here, but we'll move that.
No,
to...
we don't.
Perhaps next time.
Yeah, maybe next time.
I think I said when the show started that we have Danny Aiello on and we probably don't need anything else.
I think you're right.
Thank
Rob Spiewak. Great to have you here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, guys.
No, thank you.
Rob Ford Jr., always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Terry Stein, lots of fun.
You didn't say always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Did I say that for those two?
And most of the time.
It's always a pleasure, Terry Stein.
Tony, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Sometimes it's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you all.
We'll see you next time.
The Tony Perkins Show, a more broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.